present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a headline from the Worcester News, read by Diana Speed.
Horse slips down a hill and becomes trapped in Herefordshire.
And our thanks to Robert Lewin Jones for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Bob Mills. And opposite them on my left, Samira Ahmed and Justin Morehouse. Jeremy, who is resorting to retorting over a report that's not reporting?
James Brokenshire, yes, is the new immigration minister. The last one had to resign, Mark Harper, I think, because it turned out his cleaner was an illegal migrant, which is the whole point of having a cleaner. If you're too lazy to tidy up after yourself, you can at least provide shelter to someone without papers. I used to have an illegal cleaner when I went through a very lazy period. Now I just don't bother to clean at all. But anyway, the last one dobbed in his cleaner and had to resign. And the new one is just swaggering around, going on about how immigration is a disaster. It pushes up house prices, apparently. It's not down to landlords or estate agents or Kirsty Allsop. It's all Huguenot weavers that are causing the problem. And there's a report came out saying, you know what, immigration's not that much of a problem, don't worry about it. And the government hid that because they want everyone to worry about immigration because it's one of their big election gambits. But people just need to stop worrying and it's all fine. And we're all migrants, we all move. The only person on this panel who's really a Londoner is Samira, who's a Londoner. Justin is from the Northwest. Bob is from the Northwest. I'm from Surrey. I was a migrant. I was forced to leave Surrey. If I were still in Surrey, I would now be a constituent of Michael Gove, and I think that alone affords me the right to indefinite leave to remain. The places in the country where people worry most about immigration are the places where there's no immigration, and those are also the places with the highest unemployment and the places with absolutely no migrants, like Cornwall, places like that where nobody lives and there's no jobs either. Because people have got this idea that if there was only one person in the country, that person would enjoy the level of national wealth that we have at the moment. They'd just be very busy doing everything. But, you know, and people say, oh, well, they're putting tradespeople out of work. What puts tradespeople out of work is people doing DIY, which is basically scabbing, if you think about it. You know, there are unemployed City and Guild plumbers out there and you're faffing around trying to fit your own carsy. Leave it alone and watch telly and get someone in to fix it for you.
Do you not think that the name of that new Conservative immigration minister, he's called James Brokenshire? I mean, if that is not a harbinger of things to come.
The point he's trying to make, James Brokenshire, is a rebuttal to Vince Cable, who said, oh, there's no problem with immigration, it's a wonderful thing. And that's what he's saying, it's a wonderful thing for you, because people aren't coming over from the EU to be the dodgy old bloke who sits on the Liberal Democrat benches. They're coming over to do other sort of menials. Like, the case in point is Mark Harper, who's had to resign because he's found he was employing an illegal immigrant to clean his house, which is a job for a Mancunian, right?
We don't clean our houses. You've seen those documentaries. Or as we call it, Coronation Street.
Samira, this suppression of this report, allegedly, it was discovered by BBC Newsnight, who, you know, historically never get anything wrong.
I think it was put together by civil servants, which is interesting because, of course, their duty is to give impartial advice and not to be politically biased, which is significant. But also, to be fair, the government says the report wasn't finished yet.
Oh, I love that.
So they should have just got an immigrant in to finish it off for them. They're very efficient.
A coalition row has broken out after Downing Street was accused of blocking publication of a report showing the impact of immigration on British jobs is well below that claimed by ministers. The data does not back her up, and The Guardian reported that warfare had broken out between Vince Cable and Theresa May, the least threatening clash since that episode where the Chuckle Brothers were boxers. The coalition had hoped to cut net migration to below 100,000, but it's actually risen to 212,000. Though with Nick Clegg and Nigel Farage about to go head-to-head, there's still a chance that 112,000 people will be inspired to flee the country. 2 points to Jeremy. Bob, whose ex wants to bring more to the party?
Oh, is this Tony? This is Tony Blair. Remember Tony?
Yeah.
Oh, remember those glorious days? Well, get rid of that warmonger Thatcher and we've got this bright new... Tony's coming and he's all shiny and love him and he raises people from the dead and he's a great, wonderful man. He's going to save the country and bring socialism back to the fore. Well, he's now worth 75 million quid, apparently.
What, so scrap value?
Yeah. So he's done that. And Tony, from what I understand, has been a donor to the Labour Party. And he's given him a few grand here and a few grand there. And he gave him 75 grand in non-cash support.
Non-cash?
Yeah,
what's
exactly. Well, apparently he's lent them some people to work for them whose wages, had they been working for him, would have been 75,000. So that's how it worked last
time. Oh, I see. I thought you meant something like I Heart Tony T-shirts.
Yes, exactly. So, but now what he's done is he's so impressed with what Ed Miliband's done, which is he's thrown off the shackles of the unions, apparently. Is that right?
You have to opt in now. You can opt in.
Right, and apparently that's a good thing, except that it's cut their income from the union for something like 16 million to something like £1.38.
Yeah.
But Tony said, don't worry, I'll make up the shortfall, because he's absolutely loaded. And he said, anything you want, I've got it here, I'll send it round. Cherie will bring it round in the big bag, and it'll be fine. But some people are saying, well, where's he got his money? Because he's a good socialist, and he's a people person. And the people that he's been personing with have been Kuwait, Kazakhstan, Qatar, Mongolia, and Rebecca Brooks. In no particular order.
Wow, there's a girl band I'd like to hear.
So the problem is, and I don't feel one way about it than the other, but to me, I would think that at some point he would have said, how much do you need for office expenses? And how much do you need for posters for the campaign? Fine. And how much do you need for transport? And how much do you need for immunity from war crimes? Sorry, Sam, what was that last thing? Nothing, don't worry.
But, I mean, it is a multi... 75 million, did you say? Yeah. I suppose he does a lot of speaking engagements. Probably you can charge double if you've got two faces, I imagine.
The attempt to go for sort of difficult causes, you know, solving Middle East peace, getting Ed Miliband elected.
Yeah, yeah. What's he saying? He wants to give Ed Miliband a war chest. You don't think of Ed having a war chest, do you? More like a pigeon, I would think. Tony Blair is considering making a significant donation to the Labour Party, which is facing a funding crisis following Ed Miliband's union funding reforms. Blair is now very rich, thanks to his extensive property portfolio, his consultancy work for JP Morgan, and his pact with the devil. Tony Blair employs 200 people, four of whom have to regularly check his appearance now that he has no reflection. Two points to Bob. Samira, listen to this. All we are saying
is give me such a chance. What you say? All we are saying is give me such a chance.
Samira, which surprising candidate is peace giving a chance to?
This is the remarkable situation where Russia has just invaded Crimea, essentially, but Vladimir Putin has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes. It's sort of breathtaking, isn't it? I mean, to be fair, he does wrestle bears. I mean, Russia might be swarming with them if it wasn't for him, so he has done something, hasn't he?
Well, it's been interesting how the Russia Today news station has operated, because I don't know if any of you watch it, but it's a fascinating perspective at the best of times on things. And not only have they had two news anchors who've suddenly woken up and realised that maybe some of the stuff it broadcasts is quite questionable propaganda, but a paper noted they had the same actress turn up in five different news reports, pretending to be the mother of a soldier, a Kiev resident. But obviously they were planting people to sort of present a pro-Russian point of view.
God, has that already been filmed? I was up for that role. I'm so...
We're not going to do anything, though, are we? You know, we'll say stern things and sort of go, you, Vladimir. Oh, that's basically what we're doing. Oh, you're a caution. What do you like? That's basically our life. Because all we can really do is withdraw the royals from the Winter Paralympics because Prince Harry was doing the inbred snowball fighting.
I really want to see that.
Here's the weird thing about the Nobel Peace Prize, or any of the Nobel Prizes. There's a committee that decides who gets them. But you have to be nominated, and you can be nominated by a terrifyingly wide array of people. You have to be a member of parliament or an ex-Nobel Prize winner, or a professor of social studies, law, history, right. The rector of a university. Aren't you the rector of a university?
I'm Chancellor of Portsmouth University.
Well, I'm sure you can nominate people for...
Well, I'm surprised not to be on the list myself.
So I think the question is, who's nominated him?
Well, I don't know, and I wonder if it's... You know that thing where you pick the worst child at football for the team in order to give them some encouragement? Maybe it's supposed to say to Putin, that peace thing's a good... It's a bit like giving, I don't know, Kim Jong-un a BAFTA. Do you know what I mean?
They did give it to Kissinger. I mean, if you look at the past winners of the Nobel... Kissinger, who laid waste to Cambodia, has won it. The Spice Girls won it. Fred West won it. I mean, they don't... You know.
You can be nominated by members of a National Assembly, and I'm trying to think, would Putin have any access to National Assembly?
Possibly.
That's just ridiculous.
The trouble is with him, he's like the Kim family of North Korea. He, because he's comedic, you forget quite how loathsome he is, because he's got that sort of comical... He looks like one of the muscle-bound older men at the gym who spend too long talking their private parts. or indeed blow-drying them. He looks like he's got that weird look about him, and right. So you forget that he is actually an entirely dreadful monster.
There's a fantastic quote from his press conference. Unity is happening now in the Ukraine, where not a single shot has been fired, except in occasional scuffles.
Well, this is significant because, of course, there's a huge amount of very corrupt Russian and Ukrainian money that comes through the UK. And if you privatise, for example, these limited liability partnerships you can set up are a great way to launder this kind of money. And one of the things that our government is not talking about is serious financial sanctions, which, of course, if you put a freeze on a lot of that money that's in London, it's also affecting the property market at the high end, it might be interesting to see what could happen.
Oh, so they don't dare, really?
Well, I think there's so much money that British banks and accountancy firms make from all this money coming through London and all these big Russian firms. No one wants to offend them. But actually, if you froze it, the Russian government would be forced to finance all its own expenses.
But also, if you froze it, maybe a few Londoners could afford to buy houses in London. I think that would be fine.
We could tell them they're not allowed to murder their opponents on our soil. That in future they'll have to poison their own sushi.
Well, I was going to say, you think about a proper public inquiry into the death of Litvinenko, which is yet to happen, and there's big questions about why that's not been allowed to happen, because it would embarrass the Russian government, and there's a lot of Russian money in this country.
And there are not many people who can spell his name. It's quite
different. I did like the fact that the Syrian president Assad has expressed solidarity with Putin. It does make the West feel like we must be on the right side here. We must be. Surely that's got to be a good thing.
He's not actually won the Nobel Peace Prize. He's just been nominated.
Yes.
Because I've also noticed that King Herod had been put forward for Babysitter of the Year. and in a shock twist, I'm up for Rear of the Year as well.
Gay rights destroying, free speech hating invader of the Ukraine, Vladimir Putin, has been put on the list of nominees for the Nobel Peace Prize. And suddenly the British people feel a little less bad about Jim Davidson winning Celebrity Big Brother. Tensions continue in the Ukraine, with Russia still denying the armed men in the Crimea are Russian soldiers, although they speak Russian, are wearing Russian uniforms, and don't understand the basic etiquette of queuing for a buffet. 2 points. To Samira. Justin, why can we basically not eat anything?
Oh, this is... I wonder why you go to the fat guy for this story. This is another of those surveys that they come out every week. There's a survey that says you can't eat this, then there's one that says... I basically ignore them. There's a survey this week says too much sugar or too much animal protein could be worse than smoking. And just, are we not sick of them? You know, one week you're told, drink red wine, it's good for you. The next week you're told, no, you need to drink white wine. The week after, salt's bad for you. Then I get all confused and I get mixed up with what you do with a carpet. Do you put the salt on after the red wine, or then is it white wine? I don't know. It's just, for every one of them, there's an opposite. There's a new diet comes out. Do you remember the Mediterranean diet? They said, that's the diet we should all go on, the Mediterranean diet. The last time I was in the Mediterranean, we had kebabs and San Miguel. So that's not the kind of... It's funny, this is animal proteins could be worse for you than smoking. I'm a vegetarian. People are always... Look at the silence when the fat working-class northerner says, I'm a vegetarian. They just look at you and go, what? How'd you get so fat? I've eaten a lot of cheese sandwiches. I used to eat fish. I was a...
pescatarian.
No, a hypocrite. It's just an odd thing, isn't it? Is that more and more we are turning into the nanny state where we're told what to eat, what not to eat. You know, just eat what you... We're all going to die. It's obvious, you know. I don't mind. I'm obese. That's what I am. I don't think putting a tax on sugar is going to stop me buying a Mars bar.
Yeah, the thing is that you don't know what you're supposed to do now, because now they're saying that they used to say you shouldn't have high-fat foods like butter and chocolate and cream and so on, and now they're saying they should revise that. I mean, you have a sense that all these people are being blackmailed by Mary Berry, but there's a... that we don't know what to eat anymore.
And also, it's so disingenuous, because all it's done, they don't understand what the effect that these surveys and these pronouncements have. Because what happens now, you come round my house and we're all sitting there smoking again. Oh, that's bad for you. Apparently not. It's just like having a cheese butty. It's fine.
So, smoked bacon is presumably the worst thing you can possibly...
And a much simpler thing. All these highly paid academics can sit around all the universities and are doing all the studies in the world. If you make this noise when you stand up, you're eating too much. That's pretty much all you need to
know. It really is simple. I know I'm fat because I buy my own clothes. That's not really a problem. They're already shaming fat people. If you're fat, then you're ashamed when you buy clothes. They make life difficult for us. Medium-sized clothes, large-sized clothes. Where did they put ours, the double XL? Right at the back of the rack. Trying to get to the back of the rack with your little Tyrannosaurus Rex arms. Trying to get to there. Do you know how far back a shirt I got was the other day? Made in Narnia. That's how far I've now started buying my clothes on Amazon. That's how...
I know. Because the shops... Please, don't insult us with semantics. We both know we are neither high nor are we mighty.
I bought jeans on Amazon. And there's 16,000 pairs of jeans you can buy on Amazon. I put my particular size in. It goes down to 6. So I buy them all. And this is what you don't see when you're a normal person. I mean, you're not a big person. I'm now getting emails every day judging me because I'm buying big sizes. People like you also look for elasticated waists. They don't like me. People like you can't get life insurance. This is a genuine email I got the other day. People like you also search for adjustable slippers. How far have you let yourself go while you're sat watching Morse eating a chicken Gelfrazi and halfway through you go, ooh, these are digging in. Just don't do that. Oh, blessed relief. People, I've got a thyroid. I've got an underactive thyroid. The only thing underactive is your gym membership. That's it. Genuinely. And government legislation, all this, it's about education and it's about getting rid of all these cookery programs where they chuck some more butter in and they tell you to eat well and just about education people and schools and that sort of thing and stop making cheap food full of calories and bad for you and start making it easier for working, hard-pressed working families. to feed their families healthily. That's my answer.
Do you know what my husband said? Mm. He said, my body's a temple, but it's a temple where a lot of pigs get slaughtered.
You know that survey where they figured out that people eat too much protein? They asked unhealthy people, what do you eat? And people in surveys always lie. It's like when the doctor says, how many units of alcohol do you drink in a year? And you go, one?
I would actually say that.
Yeah, but look at you. Now, Samira, she doesn't drink alcohol at all. Now, the listeners at home, she's an absolute mess. Clothes are filthy. She looks like she's homeless. She's a right state. She's shaking. She hasn't washed.
That's why I'm
she's
on the radio.
An absolute disgrace. That's what happens when people don't drink alcohol.
Before we came in, Jeremy went, oh, it's hard not drinking, isn't it? I said, are you doing a dry month? He went, no, I've just not had one today.
Jeremy and Bob sitting together, you look like the before and after pictures of the study.
The thing is, I'm a little over 9 stone. I've got low cholesterol, low blood pressure.
9 stone?
Yes. So because, and I'm quite small, it's not like I'm 6'4", I'm more like kind of 6'3½. I am thin, I've got low blood pressure, and I've got low cholesterol, so I am forced to become a hypochondriac, because there is nothing else to make me genuinely ill. So I've got every mind... Well, I thought I was hypochondriac, and I went to the doctor, and he said, no, that's psychosomatic, you're actually sick.
I just love the way Bob said 9 stone and looked at Jeremy as if he was a potential lunch. It was...
It wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility that if Bob was to go on a crash diet, he could lose a Jeremy.
Easy. I've snuck you through excess baggage before.
So, I mean, either of you boys, have you ever thought about deciding to you're going to lose some weight? Have you ever thought about it?
I've actually lost a couple of stone recently. I've been on a diet, and I went to the doctor about some unrelated matter, and... He said, how's everything else? And he was checking everything else, everything. I said, I've lost a couple of stone. And he went, oh, right, let's just pop you on the scales. And I thought, oh, he's the one person you shouldn't lie to. Because he's going to prove it. But I actually had, and he said, well done. And I just lit up. I went, do I get a sticker?
It'd be weird if you lost weight and they gave you a lollipop. Research from the University of Southern California suggests that too much food rich in animal protein could be as bad for you as smoking. Eating too much animal protein in middle age can result in diabetes, cancer, and heart disease. It can also get you thrown out of the Waitrose deli aisle. Meanwhile, heart specialist Dr. James De Nicolantonio claimed that sugar and carbohydrates are the real culprits and that low-fat diets have no beneficial effect. Much of the advice in these various studies suggests that everything can give you cancer. In fact, the only way to avoid cancer is to die of something else first. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Bob have got 4 points, but so too have Samira and Justin. We'll start round two with a headline from ITV News West Country.
Last year, Avon and Somerset's dedicated vice team caught 234 men curb crawling. Of those, 150 were caught in fish ponds.
And our thanks to Matthew Mills for sending us that. Samira, who's taking a leisurely approach to the gender gap?
I suppose I could have bothered to look into this, but I spent the entire day doing nothing except leisure.
Yeah. Me too.
Because apparently all women, British women, are the laziest and they just hang around doing nothing, according to some OECD survey, which made me very cross. No, apparently Margaret Thatcher actually didn't do anything. She just went around in her dressing gown all day and watched... I suppose it would be in the test card rather than Jeremy Kyle in those days, wouldn't it? No, this is some survey that says that British women have the most leisure time and every British woman is absolutely furious at whoever wrote it because it's just not true. But I noticed that apparently French men... do more housework than British men. And I think this is because they must clean at their mistress's house as well.
Yeah, they're hiding evidence. That's what they're doing.
And they bring round fresh croissants on the back of a moped.
It was weird, the different nationalities they picked out. Swedish women spend the least amount of time on housework. You thought, you don't need to iron knitwear.
If you live in Sweden and the table's dirty, you just buy another one for £3. Yeah.
I was looking at a pie chart and apparently steak and kidneys come out on top, number one again. But they had a pie chart on this and by the way, this is official science. British women, 339 minutes per day leisure, 598 minutes personal care, but that includes sleeping, 197 minutes paid work, 258 minutes unpaid, and 48 minutes other. That's the one I want to get. What
is that, some euphemism for hiding in the toilet, drinking? What is that? Well, what I like was British men do precisely half the amount of housework of their partners. You think that must be so annoying. You tell them to pick the kids up from school, they only come back with one. They did find that Scandinavians are the most domesticated men in the world, spending around 3 hours a day doing housework. And I suddenly thought, oh, maybe I should get one after all.
I think the women are all out solving murders, aren't they?
They are. They're very, very busy with killings on a bridge.
It's insane to do housework because it's dark outside 9 months of the year.
It is. It's so dark. All the time we're depressed. We drink. A survey by the Organisation for Economic and Cooperative Development. Imagine working for them.
Can you imagine all the women working in that office when someone came in with that report?
Oh, they would have been in, they'd been out in the park, flying kites and riding bikes.
Well, like one of those ads for, like, Tampax.
I don't know, I've not noticed them. They're not aimed at me. See, marketing does work.
Actually, that could have solved the flooding problem if all the women had donated their intimate protective devices. They could have created a huge flood barrier in the West Country.
Can I just apologise?
And it could have been towed out to sea.
What we do is we wake Jeremy for the news quiz and then at the end we put a blanket back over his head. A survey by the Organisation for Economic and Cooperative Development has found that British women are second only to Norway in the amount of leisure time they have, but that there is still a huge gender gap in unpaid work throughout the developed world. The report was published ahead of International Women's Day. Yay! Celebrate women by showing how lazy we are. Women in Norway have the most leisure time, which they spend gossiping to their friends about how they wish they were Danish. Two points to Samira. Jeremy, which broadcaster is soon to be rendered youthless?
Oh, right. There's a BBC Three, apparently. they've got rid of it. I don't know what. They've saved money. Because they keep paying out too much money to the management at the BBC. The management pop in from time to time in the green room here and say, "Hi, I'm head of shirts at BBC... BBC Ipswich," and you say, "Well, it's a great honour to meet you. Thank you. Thank you for eating all our sandwiches." Because the thing is, when I was a young person, you just watched telly. And I grew up watching things like Chronicle. Youth TV was rubbish. It was Crackerjack and Noggin the Nog. It was terrible. You didn't want to watch that. So I say, get rid of young people's television and make them watch documentaries about the West Bengal famine of the 1940s.
Think that BBC executives kind of called in BBC Three and said, "We're very disappointed with your results. You're now grounded to iPlayer." And BBC Three goes, "Well, I never asked to be born." What you could do is maybe merge the programmes, so you could make like Snog Marry, Call the Midwife.
BBC Three is, in my opinion, it's not for me, it's for younger people, but there's a lot of comedy gets produced on there, lots of things start off there.
Is it good?
A breeding ground for new talent, people coming through, so get rid of it and keep us in work, frankly.
BBC's always trying to bring on new talent. What about those of us who might not last the winter, you know?
You're right about the radio money. I was thinking about that, because they're going to give apparently £30 million of the budget from the channel to BBC One. If they gave that much to Radio 4, honestly, we could make 30 million series of the news quiz or half an episode of In Our Time. But, I mean... if they really want to save money, I've got two words for the BBC: Top Gear. That's it.
The argument to that is that Top Gear actually does make money, doesn't it? It makes money. It's sold around the world, and BBC Three is experimental. And I do think it's odd. I have a sneaking feeling this is what we call the salad cream or the six music approach. Is that if you say something's going to go and enough people complain about it and start watching it, it might be saved.
They're not getting rid of salad cream, are they?
They were going to do. There was a thing, weren't there, that Heinz said they were going to get rid of salad cream, and suddenly people started buying it. And they're saying they're going to move it online, don't they? They say,
yeah.
Could you imagine they said that about Radio 4? Could you imagine how that would anger the audience? I don't even have an online. What is an online?
But there's also a presumption about young people, isn't there? Oh, put it online. The youngsters, they love that, you know, when they're up in their tree houses smoking their ecstasy. I mean, yes, you know, they're on their knee pads, aren't they? You know, they can watch it on there, can't they?
They should put Radio 3. They should say Radio 3 is available on your tablet. I thought most people who listen to Radio 3 are on tablets.
Well, as long as they keep the Parliament channel, that's all that matters.
The Parliament channel
is really cheap and it's fantastically soporific.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get off if you're struggling.
I don't mean...
Select committees are good.
Yeah,
they've got
they are.
Really arsey select committees now that they know they're on telly. Patricia Hodge is like Bruce Willis now.
Director General of the BBC, Tony Hall, has announced his decision to take BBC Three off the air and turn it into an online-only service from 2015. Before the move can take place, Lord Hall must get approval from the BBC Trust, the most ineptly named organisation since the People's Republic of Korea. It said BBC Three would be reinvented as a new and innovative online service and current staff replaced by some work experience students and an iPhone. 2 points to Jeremy. Justin, why might you need to take a loan against your home to not leave your child home alone?
The cost of childcare has overtaken the cost of your mortgage, which isn't surprising, really, because mortgages are as cheap as they've ever been and children are as expensive as they've ever been. It gets to a point now, I'm lucky because of the hours that I keep, that I can afford to lock my children in a room and check on them every 4 hours. But people are sending the kids to before school, breakfast club, after school clubs, which everything is so expensive. I remember when I was a child, I'm not saying we were poor, but we didn't have anything. My mum wasn't giving me money for this, that and the other. This is a true story. I'll tell you this story. My daughter turned 8, and I said, what do you want to do for your birthday? She said, I want to take my friends, and I want to go and take them. Now, I can't say the name of the shop, but it's a shop where it's a workshop where if you want a bear, you've got to build it yourself.
I wonder what such a place might be called.
Yeah. It's not a real workshop. There's no casual racism and smutty calendars. But I took my daughter to this workshop, and the bear costs twice as much if you build it yourself as if you bought it ready-made. And because it was her birthday, for her party, I had to take 5 of her little 8-year-old friends and buy them bears. This is the world we live in now. We're buying other people's children presents because I had an accident with a condom after a Christmas party. I don't see them chipping in for my vasectomy. That's what I'm saying. And you go in this thing, it's bizarre. You go in and it's a production line and some girl comes out and says, have you been to Build-A-Bear Workshop before? And you go, what do you think? And you go in and you select a carcass and you go down and you stuff it, you buy a heart, you kiss it, you make a wish. Mine was no more children. And you get to the end and they put the bear in one of them boxes, you know, like you get the cat back from the vets. And it's not as exciting as that, but that's the most exciting box you'll ever get, isn't it? The cat in the thing, because when a cat's had it, well, cat's been done. You know, you open the box and the cat's going,
where's me bits?
You never say that about your other half, do you, when she's had an hysterectomy? Oh, we've had her done. You never say that, do you? Oh, really? Yeah, we kept, every time we left the back door open, she was roaming. We'd find her days later with Ginger Tom 3 gardens down. And you get to the end, and they charge, and the children have put this bear together. It's cost you 50. And all I said was, just think, kids, if you lived in China, this would be your full-time job.
We used to, my parents used to say, should we go and pick our own strawberries? And we'd think, why? Because that was what middle-class people used to do in the 60s. And so let's go and pick our own strawberries. Now, thankfully, we have migrants to come and do that. In those days, I know, it would be a fun thing to do on the weekend, carry our own sewage out to the North Sea.
But they do that. Childminding is very expensive. But the thing is, if you send your kid to a childminder, you don't really want to be doing it on the cheap. You know what? Somebody's going to bid for it, do you? Some bloke who limps towards you, scratching himself.
I'll do it for 4 quid and a sandwich.
No, I think I'll go with the registered nurse.
Rich people just send them to boarding school, don't they? Boarding school sort of kennelling for the upper middle classes, isn't it?
Well, I went to boarding school. I used to see my parents 3 times a year. Because they lived abroad. I mean, that really is disliking your child, isn't it? That's really...
I went to a state school and never saw my dad from the age of 5. Until I appeared on the news quiz and now he's ringing me all the time.
Sorry.
Yeah, life used to mean life in those days, didn't it?
You killed somebody. And it's lovely to meet you tonight, Dad. I found out Jeremy Hardy was my father. I'd say my mum's a big girl.
Justin, I am your father.
According to a report by the Family and Childcare Trust, families are spending more on average on childcare than on their mortgage. The average mortgage costs £7,207 a year, except in London, where it's £7,207 a week. Some families are spending more on childcare than on their weekly food shop, leaving some parents no choice but to eat the children. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Bob have got 8 points, but so too have Samira and Justin. We start round three with a cutting from the Metro.
A baroness who made racist remarks in a bar in London which touched on black, Arab, Asian and Jewish people was arrested at her room in the nearby Diplomat Hotel.
And our thanks to Annie Ray for sending us that. Bob, why might British humour be a tale from the horse's mouth?
Oh, apparently they've discovered that it's the Vikings. We get all our humour from the Vikings. Dr. Klaus Gruber, the Danish ambassador, has said that Viking humour and British humour are very, very close because the Danes are big fans of sarcasm and they like Monty Python and stuff like this. And he sums up the sarcasm from a Danish saga, Grettir's saga, where the hero's brother, Atli, is stabbed through the stomach and turns to his assailant and says, "Oh, I see broad spears are in fashion this year." So he takes that to be that they like sarcasm and we like sarcasm. Ivar Berg from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology said, well, there are certain parallels, but I think he's going a bit far.
He probably does explain the tin helmet and the horns and the ginger beard, though, doesn't it? Yeah, that looks really good, Hagar. Yeah. You should wear that more often. It's a good look for you.
But it must be terrible if you're being sarcastic and people take you seriously. Can you imagine the first Viking who rather sarcastically said, you know, instead of a simple funeral, I'd rather be, I don't know, put in a boat and set alight and sent out to sea. And everyone, oh, that's a good idea. I would do that. That's fantastic.
Oscar Wilde, who was, of course, Irish and not British, is supposed to have said sarcasm is the lowest form of wit. Whereas, in fact, he said, oh, sarcasm, that's a very high form of wit. Not.
I actually thought my Latin teacher was the first person to say that. I had no idea. It was Oscar.
You thought it was your Latin teacher?
Yeah, she used to go, I think, sarcasm is the lowest form of wit.
So she used to come out with these things and you thought they were original. Like, one day she said, I have a dream. She's really profound, my Latin teacher. She's really inspiring. She should start a movement or something.
I do have to say, the Danes do have a terrific dry sense of humour, because you know all those Nordic crime things, everybody's watching The Killing and The Bridge and so on, and people watch them over here as a gritty drama. If you listen to the actual Danish, don't read the subtitles, people are sobbing with laughter. It is, honestly, it's hilarious. It's, I don't know why you've all taken it so seriously.
Are there any other Danish humorists, Sandra, apart from you?
There was Victor Borge.
Oh, yeah, he was very funny.
Yeah, and then I ran out.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, famous.
Kevin Bacon.
I have to say, recently, the only successful Danish export has been Lego, but we can build on that. The Danish ambassador to Britain, Klaus Gruber, says that sarcasm was brought to the UK by the Vikings. Yeah, right. Dr. Ranhil Ljuslau, a lecturer in Nordic studies, said it's likely the UK had imported its sense of humour from all over the world, and in return, as a token of gratitude, Britain gave the world Mr. Bean. 2 points to Bob. Samira, who's getting hung up about our manners?
There's some new survey about mobile phone etiquette, which says that you shouldn't tweet in church, apparently. But apparently half of all British people tweet on the loo.
Oh, I didn't know you could get a wiping app. That's really...
It's quite rewarding if you're having a really tedious phone conversation with someone who's quite irritating to go to the lavatory during it, especially for a long sit-down, because it's a way of showing massive disrespect without that person knowing.
Or if you just flush halfway through the conversation. Are you on the toilet? No, I'm just near a very sporadic waterfall.
The problem is when you're having a conversation with somebody and you think, oh, it's fine, I can just get through this and, you know, use the loo and stuff. And then they say, right, now take down this number. Have you got a pencil and paper? And you think, paper I've got, yeah.
I did a tour of Australia last year and we had this thing where there were 6-7 people on the tour. And at dinner, we would get our mobile phones and we would stack them in the middle of the table. And we would say, while you're eating, nobody looks at the phone. And it was just painful to watch the 6 of us slowly realise that none of us liked each other.
A new guide to mobile phone etiquette has been compiled following a study by the communications company TalkTalk. The biggest no-nos are using abbreviations, writing in capitals, tweeting in church, and using too many kisses. It's also never socially acceptable to use a phone at the cinema, unless you're watching a Jennifer Aniston movie, and then do whatever you can to stay awake. Those surveyed also criticised the overuse of annoying abbreviations such as LOL, ROFL and UKIP. It's also rude to text at a supermarket checkout, particularly when you have a whole queue of customers waiting for you to serve them. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr Hardy.
This was sent in by an anonymous Anglican, it says. And it's a strange headline in the Church Times from the 6th of March. And the headline reads, "Sexuality fudge sticks in critics' throats."
Miss Mills.
This is from Steve Brown. Maria von Trapp, the last member of the Sound of Music family, has died, according to her brother, Johannes.
Ms. Ahmed.
This is from Simon Olley, who found it on the Waitrose website, an at-a-glance description for essential Waitrose ultra-soft bathroom tissue, suitable for vegetarians, vegans, those avoiding nuts.
Mr. Morehouse.
John Meakin spotted this on the 10 o'clock news. The chairman of Birmingham City Football Club has been convicted of money laundering. The club said it was business as usual.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Bob have got 12 points, but just in the lead and the winners this week are Samira and Justin with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Halstead Neighbourhood News sent in by David Wells.
Rain, wind and more rain didn't stop members of the Gosford WI from attending their monthly meeting, where the speaker, Mr. Terry Tabor, gave a very interesting talk about his life in ladies' underwear.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Bob Mills, Samira Ahmed and Justin Morehouse. In the chair was Sandy Toxford and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair script was written by John Hunter, John Luke Roberts and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Sarah Campbell, James Bugg and Bronya Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Vanner.